He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Nau mai, whakarongo mai, ki te Aotai Whanaua. Welcome to Country Life. I'm Sally Round.
And I'm Duncan Smith. G'day. Today we talk mental health with a Waikato share milker.
We hear how the power of wool is helping clean the air we breathe.
And later on we meet some teens learning the ropes of sheep and beef farming. There's a dire shortage of workers in the industry, and the growing Future Farmers course is training up keen school leavers and their pups.
But first to our look at conditions around the motu. Northland's had varied amounts of rain this week. Whangarei had 12 millimetres, whereas further west they had three times that amount. Pasture covers are lower than this time last year, which is a significant concern for dairy farmers. It's going to be a challenge for calving. Putting on nitrogen and elemental sulphur are levers people can pull to keep grass growing. Dairy cows are lighter than normal, and a consultant recommends priority feeding early calvers and younger ones. He says beef farmers are in a positive mindset, even though the schedule's not rock star. The flow into the works is better than last year. It's been a week of two halves around Pukekohe, where fine weather prevailed at the end of the wet first half of the week. Most of the early onion crops have been sown, but the area has been reduced due to significant main crops in storage, which compete in the marketplace with the early in spring. Transporting export onions to Europe is still fraught with problems. Concerns been expressed that some of them may arrive too late to receive a rewarding price.
Most of Waikato had reasonable rain this week. Pastures are growing well and most cows are still milking, although getting into the drying off phase. Cows should be in good condition going into calving, as most farmers have fed supplemental feed during the dry. A Bay of Plenty kiwi fruit grower was sitting in the sun having a coffee when we rang. He says it's the last day picking gold and people are getting tired. There's a lot of fruit to harvest this season. Losing 4 days of last week to rain hasn't helped a raggedy end to the harvest. The cooler temperatures affecting the country meant there was quite a fall of snow on Mount Taranaki midweek, but come a sunny Thursday, quite a bit of it had melted. Northern parts of the province received about 40 millimetres this week. Further south, it was about 25 millimetres. It's been a terrific time for autumn calving dairy herds.
The promised rain largely bypassed the Whanganui region, while further north up to Tamaranui, it did get wet. Whanganui is still green, but rain is needed now while the ground's still warm. It's been a good end to the dairy season. Farmers are feeding out the excess supplements they've grown so they can keep milking. A high number of cows didn't get in calf, so a lot of farmers are hunting for in-calf cows to purchase now. Store lamb prices that had crept up a bit seem to have stalled. Obviously, Hawke's Bay farmers are still too dry to be buying extra mouths. Autofiti Station's holding an open day on the 5th of June. It trains sheep and beef farming cadets, and there are 16 places up for grabs next year. Gisborne's finally had some lovely rain. About 40 millimetres fell on Thursday. Even on the Gisborne flats, growth had stopped. The cold rains dragged soil temperatures down a little, but hopefully there are still some warm days to come. Beef farmers are feeling a bit down about cattle prices. Our contact says beautifully finished heifers are not fetching the prices they deserve. In fact, manky old bulls sell for about the same amount, which is super frustrating. Overseas restaurants need to open up again. Lamb contracts for winter are promising.
Parched Hawke's Bay had patchy rainfall on Thursday, anything from about 10 to 25 millimetres. It will kick newly sown crops and grass into gear. Follow-up is desperately needed. About 350 people attended the Hawke's Bay Farmers of the Year Field Day on Thursday. It was on Andrew and Maddie McLean's farm at Wallingford. It's been unbelievably warm all month in Wairarapa. Well, until the southerly popped through midweek. But it had been so warm, the farmer we caught up with said he almost couldn't muster in the middle of the day. There's been frustratingly little rain falling, in the 10 millimetre range. Farmers are settling into winter mode, some are starting to feed ewes, silage or baleage, as grass is not growing, and they're needing to build up covers for winter. Horo Whenua has continued to have a magnificent autumn. A bit of welcome moisture has arrived. Growers and farmers say they couldn't ask for better. Dairy herds will milk until the end of the month, and farms are getting well set up for winter and spring.
Kitawaiponamu, Nelson started the week warm and humid, but cold rain arrived midweek, as well as lots of snow in the mountains. People are battening down for winter. With space tight, cattle are slow moving to the works. It seems bigger farms are getting looked after rather than smaller ones. Dairy farmers are looking to maximise returns and will milk to the end of the season if they can. All in all, the region's well set up for winter. Even the dry areas are looking good. The farmer we called in dry as a bone Marlborough had 20 millimetres of very welcome rain this week. There was even a touch of frost. Pregnancy scanning of ewes is underway. He says knowing how many lambs ewes have on board will help him make decisions about feed, which is very important when there's little to go around. In vineyards, posts are being replaced and pruning's well underway.
On the west coast, subtropical Karamea has had 80 millimetres of rain, which we're told was more than the doctor ordered. It was beautifully sunny on Friday morning. Culls have been sent off our contact's farm and he's now down to his basic herd, which is still milking. There's just a comfortable amount of grass in front of the cows. Finally, some rain landed in Canterbury, with 10 to 20 millimetres falling across the region. With it, however, has been snow on the hills and heavy frosts, quite a change from 24 degrees on Tuesday. Feed levels are tight and a lot of baleage is being transported to those in need. Hopefully more rain comes and some mild temperatures. They're both in the forecast.
Farmers in the Ida Valley in central Otago woke to clear blue skies and -7 degrees on Thursday, -6 on Friday. The farmer we called says that's not too unusual for May. He remembers as a boy breaking through ice to get to a duck on opening day. He says a winter feed crop competition was being judged in the Maniototo on Friday. Turnips, swede and fodder beet crops will be weighed and per hectare measurements taken. Southland had sleet on Tuesday night and wicked frosts to follow. The Takitimu Range has a thick coat of icing. Gardens have taken a hammering. Hydrangeas that were blue on Tuesday were black by Friday. Working conditions on farm have been fabulous if you've wrapped up warmly. There was barely a breath of wind on Wednesday and Thursday and not a cloud in the sky. Cows are being dropped out of herds as the end of milking season approaches. Paddocks across Southland are dotted with bales of feed, ready to be slashed open during winter.
You're listening to Country Life on RNZ National, 101 FM.
Carol's heading off now to meet a Waikato share milker who's getting used to doing a bit of public speaking.
It's just the last one, but you'll have cows circling around behind you.
Cool.
So we're moving from this farm on the 31st of May. We've already moved house. We've been lucky enough to purchase our own farm in Manamana, and that's a dry stock farm. A 70-hectare grazing property with our own house on it, so it's nice to have our own abode that's not owned by anybody else.
So you're no longer going to be dairy farming?
Well, my title might not say so, but I'm going to be a operations manager on two dairy farms whilst looking after the dry stock property as well.
So these are your cows?
Yep, these are my babies. We've had them for 7 years, so most of them we helped birth and then reared for the last 7 years, so it's a bit emotional seeing them go, but I know where they're going and I know they're going to a good home.
How many cows are you saying goodbye to?
There's 180 leaving on the 31st of May, so we're just doing a bit of a tidy up. Anything that needs a little bit more weight before they leave are getting drafted off and they're going to get a little bit more TLC.
Do you know how to be a dry stock farmer?
I've dabbled with it before, but I don't know if I can be able to sit still during July and August. That's my issue. It's always been the hectic time, so I might have to just run up a few more hills or get up early and read the paper just to feel like I'm still part of it. Cool. If you want to just hop out of it. Farming since I started 21 years ago has gone from a practical hands-on job to it's now split 50-50, where it's practical plus the paperwork and the electronic side where you have to keep everything up to date. So now we keep records of where we apply our effluent, cow movements, treatments, accidents, registers, where and what we were putting on the pasture for fertilizer, and also what feeds we supplement. It's a matter of just learning the new processes and how to factor them into the business.
Looking at your record-keeping system here.
Yeah, there's still a good old pen on the back of the hand, but the iPhone and the whiteboard in the shed provide great backup. I just need some sugar to get me going.
A Coke.
Sorry.
21 years you said you've been farming.
21 years. So I emigrated from the UK in 1997 with my family and went to college at Hauraki Plains College, just out of Ngātia there. Farming wasn't my first choice. My first love has always been sport, and it still is. I play golf badly and still try and run out now and again and play soccer and also coach my children's soccer team. So giving back to the community by doing things like training children or speaking to young farmers is just as rewarding as completing a good day's work or playing sport myself.
I've noticed that you have been doing a circuit, really. You've been talking to lots of young farmers groups and you generally talk to them about mental health.
Yeah, that's right. I've had my struggles in the past and it's still at the forefront of my mind when I'm doing anything is my mental health. I've been through probably a couple of decent bouts of depression and some sideline anxiety problems. But I find that in the farming sector, like I was saying before, there's more and more pressure on compliance and everything, all your ducks in a row. And so it can come to a fore where the pressure can become too much or you haven't vented your pressure or put the tools in place to handle that pressure. One thing I'm always really passionate about is farmers are really great at handling practical problems. We're really good at looking at a broken post or drafting cows like we were this morning. But when we have the mental pressure come on, we find it hard to express how we feel. Now, one thing I've learnt in the past is turning the things in my head into practical is just writing a list. And they become practical problems when you can see them in front of you on a piece of paper or on a spreadsheet or on a computer, whatever you want to do, or even just voicing them with another person. I also think diet is really important, looking after yourself, not so much eating celery and three square meals of tofu, but I feel a bit condescending here because I'm currently sipping on a can of Coke to keep the energy levels up this morning. But I had a good eggs on toast this morning with a cup of tea with my children before they went to school. I make sure I take a rest period at lunchtime and have another square meal, and then when we get home from football tonight, I know there's steak and potatoes ready to go. So just keeping that fuel level up and also keeping your sleep patterns up. As farmers, we are shockers at working long nights to get the fertilizer on or getting up early just to meet the truck or whatever. So trying to get 6 or 7 hours is key to keeping a fresh mind and a good mental state, I find.
If you're writing a list, there's probably going to be a lot of things on it because there's always something to do on a farm. Does it sometimes make you feel, if you haven't crossed off enough, that you're just not on top of things?
Yeah, it can. But if you can tick off everything on your list each day, you're either burning the candle at both ends or you're heading for a crash. Now, we kind of have a policy that if we can feed everything properly each day, including ourselves, we can milk the cows and we can all get home safely. That's the basis to a good day, and anything on top of that is a bonus.
When you speak to young farmers groups, what sort of a response do you get?
It's a mixed one. If you read the room, there's people who are focused but quiet. There are people who are agreeing with you vocally, which I sometimes take as that they've been along that journey or they've started to realise. Because with mental health, it can be that you fall into a funk and you just think it's tiredness or you think you're run down or you're not feeling that great. But it can be a slippery slope to a quite a big crash or a big fall. So when I talk to these groups, I've got to be probably mindful that some of these people might not be in a great headspace. Some of them might have been at the other side of it, and some of them, they've got the tools in place or the people surrounding them to help them through anything that might come their way. So I always say there's no question off the table when I speak, because I think the questions that need to be asked are the ones that are sometimes people are not brave enough to ask. I sought counselling. I sought my doctor's help first, And they got me on some medication, which didn't agree with me at first, so we changed. And the way of counsellors, I've been through a couple, and the first one was good, but couldn't really relate to the farming and the rural background that I had. When I got to a second counsellor who had had a rural background, who had grown up on a farm, I could portray what was going on farm and the stresses I was feeling. So I think seeking help, that's the biggest step you have to take, is being brave enough and vulnerable to ask for help.
When you're a farmer, there's a lot you can't control, like the weather.
Yeah, so Mother Nature is a cruel mistress some days. You've got to focus on the controls that you can pull the levers on. So our effluent pond is empty at the moment. The pump's regularly serviced, and the effluent spread is always serviced and positioned in a way that if it did rain or if we had to use it, it wasn't going to cause any negative effects to the environment or the waterways around it. Ticking off those things can be one less thing you have to worry about at night, and that could be the one thing that would usually keep you awake, but it's actually giving you restful sleep. So it's even as much as, you know, shutting all the gates up on the way out in the farm at night. So just in case that little trigger in your mind goes, well, did I shut this gate? Well, all the rest are backed up.
When you were at your lowest, how were you behaving? How did it impact on you?
Productivity was very low. I was getting up in the morning and I was already feeling that I'd done a day's work. I was physically tired, very lethargic, and there was no planning in place. It was just, I knew I had to get through the workload by the end of the day and there was no plan. So I was probably doing things two or three times, going in roundabout ways to get to a final destination instead of planning and taking a direct route. Going to do farm jobs where I'd have to come back two or three times to collect the tools or the equipment I needed to do it. Disconnected from family and friends. So not really communicating properly with people around me, so just more just yes, no answers. The eating thing was more just, oh, I'll grab something when I need it. And also seeing the glass half empty all the time instead of seeing the glass half full was always a big thing. I still do it now, and it's still probably one of the big things I still can't get on top of, is when things are really good, looking at the negative side of things when things aren't good. So when you're at the bottom of the hill, it's easy to look up and think, well, I've got to work my way towards it. But when you're at the top, you think the only way is down. Like, we've just bought our first farm, which is overwhelming, and it's amazing to see what we've started to achieve. But yeah, it's still in the back of your mind, well, what it could be taken away, what was something to happen. But I'm starting to smile when I turn up to our own farm, and yeah, it's starting to sink in slowly.
So the things you do are, you eat well, you give back.
Yep.
You make lists.
Yes.
What else do you do?
Get off farm. Part of the thing of mental well-being is sometimes when you're a farmer, you seem locked in by the boundary fence. You can sometimes, the boundary fence is like a 10-foot-high wall. So getting out that gate and taking a fresh perspective on what other people are doing or on another activity that's not milking cows and monitoring pasture can sometimes just relax the brain enough to get refocused. And also, like I say, having your own mentors. It doesn't matter how far you're up the tree, whether you're the chairman of Fonterra or whether you're a farm assistant in your first year, you need to have a mentor. You need to have someone to lean on to ask questions and to defrag and pick their brains. Like I say, I felt the loss of a mate taking their own life, and if I have to be brutally honest about my journey and it helps one more person, if I've reached out to one person, it's been all worth it.
Sam Owen. He says goal setting is a good tool, but farmers shouldn't be put off if their journey towards the goal has a few twists and turns. He says there's a lot to be learnt along the way. He also sought to be around people making a positive difference and joined the Dairy Environment Leaders program. We'll put a few contacts for organisations that can offer support on our webpage.
Now we're catching up with the founder of an Auckland firm, Lanaco. It was formed nearly a decade ago to help lift the value of New Zealand wool. The company makes filters. They can be used in anything from face masks and air conditioning units to medical devices and in NASA's space program. Over the past decade, Lanaco's been specifically breeding a fine wool sheep in central Otago called an Astino, part Merino, Cheviot and Finnish Landrace. Company founder Nick Davenport says natural wool fibre is an ideal substitute for synthetic products because it naturally repels bacteria and naturally absorbs toxins. So during a pandemic like COVID-19, one would assume face masks would be hot property. Susan Murray called him to find out.
I think probably people would think we'd be the busiest business in the world, but in COVID environment, it is extremely difficult to break through. So our original plan has been and still remains global dominance, but we're flooded. The world has become flooded with synthetic plastic masks, which are becoming the world's next environmental problem. So we're fighting against that, and we're getting a lot of traction with people that realise that there is another problem following COVID-19, which is the environmental problem. So we base our technology on wool for two reasons. One is it actually provides better performance for an individual or a device because it provides the lowest possible airflow resistance or breathing resistance if it's a mask. That has a lot of advantages for anybody who's ever worn one. And that low resistance is coupled with very high protection efficiency. So that enables us to make P2 or N95 respirators right through to consumer masks, medical devices, inline air filters, all these types of things with a performance advantage. That's the first one. And the second one is the environmental issue. We have a platform for future technology where people are going to be sick of pouring tons and tons and tons of plastic fibre into the waste streams, which end up in the ocean or in landfill for millions of years. So what we're doing in terms of the business is targeting future business. And future business does not compete on price at the bottom of the market. It competes on performance and as a future product platform. So we're working with designers, engineers and manufacturers who are making masks for the next generation, air purifying devices for the next generation of devices and medical devices for the next generation of devices.
And who else in the world is doing this and doing it with wool?
I don't think anybody else has had the opportunity, really. We're not aware of anybody else that's doing it. I could possibly say that I can understand why, because it's been a long and very expensive journey to build a breeding program to inform such high levels of performance in the filter. So obviously we go right back to the farm, right back to the genetics, and where we have used a breeding program and produced a breed which informs all of our science. And being in an industrial space, we call those little four-legged animals our extruders. So they're out there in the fields extruding our fibre to our specification. And that's really, really important when you're dealing in medical product. Building that base of technology has taken six solid years of the breeding program and 7 or 8 years of science to prove its efficacy.
How many sheep have you got in the program?
A breeding program like ours starts with a genetic core. So we start with a breeder flock, which we call our elite flock. And that comprises about 1,500 animals. And they produce the lambs and rams, which then go to our multiplier or contract flocks.
So potential for, what, a lot higher numbers of sheep to be providing the core product, the wool?
Absolutely. I mean, our play is not a volume play. It's not how many more million sheep can we add to New Zealand. It's how many more dollars can we get per sheep. And so while we're dealing with a technology which produces a filter, say, in a mask, we're talking about 1 gram of wool can improve a person's health for a day or a week, potentially. Now, if you multiply that out to 8 billion people every day, you've got quite a large number. But the most important number is really the dollars per kilo.
And wool, you can prove, does a better job at filtering air in all sorts of places, like you were saying, so atmospherically, you know, from air pollution, anywhere that air filtration, anywhere people breathe, your product could be used and will be better.
By and large, in most examples, absolutely. There are a number of technical reasons which we won't go into now. And some of those reasons we've actually found out by surprise on the way that are additional advantages. So the only disadvantage we really have is that we kind of acknowledge that wool will be the more expensive fibre than any synthetic fibre. So we have a cost barrier, which means large filters, like big industrial filters, would be quite uncompetitive. But when we're getting down to small filters in the likes of masks or medical devices, where the weight of wool is relatively insignificant compared to the benefit that it gives the user, it's a huge opportunity. And so long, if you can get that type of product to millions or billions of people, then you have a very, very viable program, and that's what we've been working towards. And I guess the other thing in terms of performance, we have now supplied to NASA as this filter for critical life support for the next men and women who are going to the moon and beyond. They chose our technology above all other technologies in the world because of the function that the wool gives to that filter in protecting the air that those astronauts breathe in a hazardous environment.
And who else have you, do you think you'll have success with? Like, what has reaction been as you're pushing out to become a global business?
We're still very small globally. Obviously, we don't have any misconception about that. And our advertising and reach has been fairly small up until now. But we've been attracting all sorts of people who are, we call them innovators, and those people who can see forward to the future. So people such as designing the next generation of air purifier or ventilation system, who realise that the synthetic filters that they use could be improved, they could use less energy. And you just imagine for every apartment building in Asia or Europe or the Americas, if they could reduce the energy consumption by 10 or 20% through their use of better filters, that's quite a few power stations saved around the world. So people are starting to realise this. And then medical devices, we've got a lot of opportunity in working in that space there because we've created medical respirators, N95 P2 respirators, as the sort of the first flagship product, which is what we make here in Auckland. And we're getting a lot of interest in that around the world. And it kind of sets a benchmark for all other products.
Must be pretty exciting.
It's very exciting because you never know what when the phone rings which part of the world it's going to come from, and each one of those inquiries we can generally find a satisfactory solution for them, and we know that as we work with these people from the outset, this will build the technology in for the future based on New Zealand sheep. There's all sorts of attributes depending on how you use it in this application that you can build a value proposition for different market sectors. So it's a total relook at what wool can do compared to traditional users.
Where are the products going to be made? So you're saying the NASA filtration products are done in Auckland. Will you keep all the technology, the IP and the production onshore?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole breeding program is founded around New Zealand sheep genetics. With COVID-19 now, obviously, the volume scenario has certainly increased. So our manufacturing, we will be making using our product, but we will look at licensing options where we can, for environmental reasons, where it's important to put manufacturing closest to market, we will look at licensing plants around the world to produce the technology closer to market.
Nick Davenport, founder of Lanaco.
Hi, I'm John Hellstrom. We live in Endeavour Inlet. Every Saturday morning, one of the highlights is listening to Country Life on RNZ National.
For our next story, Carol's taking us to King Country to hear about a new program designed to produce farming's next generation.
I'm happy to give these boys and girls a hand. It's great to see them interested in farming, and we just haven't got enough young people interested in farming. So, more than happy to help where I can. Hopefully we'll just impart the enjoyment of working dogs and working good dogs, and they'll enjoy that for the rest of their days. Yeah.
Why are you barking somewhere?
Quiet!
Yeah, I'm coming.
Hi, I'm Carol.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Hello. Oh, who's this?
This is Kaz.
Kaz, and yeah. She's very jumpy.
She is very jumpy, so I'm trying to teach her not to jump.
Yeah.
How's it all going?
Yeah, I love it. I'm enjoying it so much. Yeah, living the dream.
Today, 10 future farmers have gathered at a farm near Te Kuiti, 6 young men and 4 young women aged between 16 and 18. They're here with their enthusiastic heading dog pups for a morning training session. All of the teenagers want a career in sheep, beef or deer farming. They're students on the new Growing Future Farmers program.
Always had a passion in the sheep and beef, but when I left school there wasn't a program like this and I couldn't get into it because the minimum requirements to go in as a junior shepherd was every farmer was looking for a minimum 1 year experience and a team of dogs, and I didn't know what I was doing with dogs and I didn't have a year experience, and it was really hard to get your foot in the door. So I see this as a bit of a bridge for those students that maybe have been in my shoes wanting to get there but can't get there. This will allow them to do that.
So what we're trying to do is help with that career pathway from school into farming so that they're trained on farm.
And I think the thing that I've probably realised is with the dairy as opposed to sheep and beef is that actually a person can earn the minimum wage and be of value to that because they're in the cow shed milking. A lot of the time it's quite a repetitive task, so you can train for that industry a lot quicker than for sheep and beef to be ready to earn a working wage. So with the sponsorship program, it's a long-term training program that gets them ready for that at entry level.
Sin Smith is the general manager for Growing Future Farmers. She says the students are enrolled to do their tertiary training through the Eastern Institute of Technology based in Hawke's Bay. And the Growing Future Farmers program moves the teaching of the Certificate of Agriculture and Certificate of Primary Industries out of the classroom and onto a farm. Specialists like dog trialist Graham Breyer are brought in to teach the students. But most of the training is done by farmers.
So the farmers sign up as farm trainers and then they sponsor the student. So they pay the student $180 a week and they put them up on the farm so they get their accommodation on site. They supply them with meat and Wi-Fi and their power's paid, but they have to buy their own food out of the sponsorship money. And then they work with them 4 days a week training them, and then the educational side of the program supports that training. So for instance, if they are doing some doing their fencing program, they'll be doing targeting their fencing hours and getting that experience on the farms. So the students come together once a fortnight at least, sometimes more, and sometimes they'll do 2 or 3 day campouts and specialist skills like handpiece in the shearing shed, and they'll do campouts on farm to do that. So we have a nice little cohort of students in the regions. We sort of have 8 to 10, so they get that socialisation as well, because the geographic isolation of rural training is really challenging for our young people. So we've got a good wellness program. We get them involved if we can with young farmers, some community events, so it's sort of looking after the whole individual whilst they're doing their training.
It's quite a commitment from the farmer.
Very big commitment, but there's been a real uptake by farm trainers because they see the need and the lack of young people coming into their sector. And a lot of the farmers are ageing and they see the concern of that there's actually not those people coming through with the skills that's needed to maintain the sector's staffing.
A regional pilot for the Growing Future Farmers program was held last year in Wairarapa and in Gisborne, but this year the pilot has been rolled out nationally. It's a 2-year program with no fees.
So this year we've got 6 regions. So we're in Gisborne, King Country, Hawke's Bay, Taihape, Wairarapa, and then in the South Island we've got 2 very small cohorts, one in Winton and one in Kurau. So they only have 2 and 3 students, but we were rolling out and looking at Marlborough and North Canterbury next year as well.
And at the moment, how many first years have you got in training?
45 across the country.
Lockie, where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Aria.
Is that where you grew up?
Nah, I grew up in Hamilton, but that is where my farm is at the moment, my training farm.
Did you always want to go farming?
Yep, always from a young age. I started going out on farms when I was probably like 13, and then, found this opportunity. And
how's it going?
Oh, loving it, loving every second of it, yep, learning heaps. So.
What have you learnt so far?
Drenching, weighing, spraying. And driving tractors, driving bikes, it's good fun.
So you're a city boy?
Yeah.
So how did you first hook up with the farmer?
Grandparents first, and then family, friends. and then they lent me on to Growing Future Farmers.
You're only a few months into the course. Can you already see what you might quite like to do at the end of it?
Yeah, it's definitely going shepherding down South Island on horseback or something with a team of dogs. That's definitely my goal.
And what do you like on horseback?
I haven't really tried it, but our farmers have got horses and they say we can have a go at it if we want, so definitely give that a go.
Your situation area, farmers have put up their hands and have said, yep, you can come and stay with us or live on our place. They provide you accommodation, give you a bit of meat and training. Yeah, that's quite...
Pretty lucky.
Yeah, and they give you an allowance every week.
Yeah.
So that's a commitment from them.
Oh, definitely. Very grateful for it.
I'm Blake.
Oh, hello, Blake. Who have you got on your knee?
Tui.
How's Tui?
Yeah, he's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah? What does Tui like to do?
Nah, he likes to chase sheep and he likes to fight sometimes. Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from Tokoroa.
From a farm?
Yep, from a dairy farm.
What have you learnt so far on the course?
Handling sheep and learning a bit of everything, fencing, chainsaws.
What were you doing last year?
School, year 12 at school. Yeah, the farm that I'm with, it's really great. Like, we've got a real good boss. He helps us out with anything we need and he provides everything.
Do you have to cook for yourself?
Yes.
How's that going?
Yeah, it's going pretty good because I live with Lockie, so we sort of share around the cooking.
Yeah, who's better?
Me.
So we'll just head down here. So volunteers, we're into it.
What are you doing today?
Today we're just reinforcing what we've done other days, teaching the pups how to stop and how to get them behind, so we have control of them wherever we go. Hopefully, that's our plan, and then we'll move on to the sheep after that.
They're still quite young, aren't they? These pups.
They are quite young. Yeah, this is an age they learn really easily.
A lot of the students I've spoken to have said that their dogs are so interested in sheep already.
That's what we want to hear. We want all of them like that. Okay, guys, who's coming? Anybody? Come out here, save me, Regan, save me from that microphone.
The students are also given two pups to train. First a heading dog, and then a few months later, a huntaway. After a year, all going well, ownership of the dogs is passed to the students.
Do you want to just let him run around with the rope, drag it on the ground, Regan, and see how he goes?
There's a lot of barking heading dogs here.
They do know how to bark, yes.
At the end of 2 years, the well-trained dogs will be worth a few thousand dollars each.
All farmers and all people in the industry know that we've got a huge problem with being able to attract young, capable people into the industry, and with this pilot, we hope to solve this issue.
John Jackson is the chair of the GFF board. He also has a student on his farm.
You know, these kids can come out with two trained dogs, 2 years of education, and that education embedded with a great set of farming skills and be very employable. And we desperately need that as an industry.
Of the 60,000 students who leave school each year, fewer than 3% go on to study agriculture, and only a portion of those intend to enter the sheep and beef industry. However, 65% of New Zealand's productive agricultural land farms sheep, beef or deer. And this year, the revenue from meat and wool exports is forecast to reach around $10 billion. John says some of the previous attempts to train sheep and beef farmers haven't worked.
What we've learned is that you need to be embedded in the culture of farming to learn. You can't learn in a classroom. So there's a couple of well-renowned training institutions, Waipoa and Smedley, and then historically we've had other organisations like Taratahi and Flockhouse. Smedley and Waipoa, they're very oversubscribed. They turn out great people, but the most difficult part of it is getting in.
John believes there'd be thousands of job vacancies across the country related to sheep and beef farming.
There's no point in us talking about sustainability in any areas farming-wise if we haven't got a keen and ready workforce that is being developed on a constant process, because those young people that start off with this course, you know, are ultimately our managers and our block managers and progress up through the value chain. So you've got to start somewhere, and this is a wonderful place.
Your dog is?
Flo.
How's Flo?
Yeah, she's doing reasonably well. She's a bit of a pain. She tries running off every chance she has to go after sheep. Not a bad thing. Shows she's keen, but yeah.
What were you doing last year?
I was at school at Melville High in Hamilton.
Are you a city boy?
Yep, city boy, yep.
So what made you think of doing this course?
Always wanted to go farming, so, and then I heard about it through school, so I thought I'd apply and got accepted.
What part of the course so far has excited you the most?
Stock work the most.
And long term, what do you see yourself doing?
Oh, hopefully going down south shepherding, down the big station.
Hello. Emma. Yeah. Hi, who have you got here?
So this is Ash.
How's Ash going?
She's all right. She's quite a handful, you know. Yeah, as pups are.
So what are you doing now? What's everyone gone off to do?
We're going to go let them out on some sheep and see how they go. Yeah, the boys are going up the top for the more friskier, biting sort of sheep. Yeah.
How are you finding the course?
Yeah, it's been really great, really eye-opening.
What can you see yourself doing in 5 or 10 years' time?
I quite like shepherding on a horse. So it's probably something down south, yeah. Yeah.
Everyone I've spoken to wants to move to South Island. Who's going to work on in the North Island?
No one.
We're on Robin Stevens' farm.
Oh, I'm just about to take a few training sheep through to a little square paddock at the end so the students can all have a turn at showing how their dogs handle sheep. Hopefully they manage to get them to stop when they tell them to stop, because that's what we've been working on. The important thing at this stage is your pup's keen to run. I mean, they're working dogs after all, and the major point is getting them to know that their job is to gather up sheep and bring them to you. So, yeah, let's see what happens.
So this is Ellen Johnstone, this is Carol.
Hello.
How are you, Carol?
I'm very well, thank you. You've got a student on your place?
We have.
Who do you have?
We have Ella Cumstone. She's with her dog Manu. They're all very well bred, so it makes it a hell of a lot easier for them because they've got their natural ability.
Why did you offer to have a student?
I think we need these young people coming into the industry, and this program gives urban kids the opportunity to have a crack at farming. So if they've got a great attitude, it'll work for them. But the problem is in the industry is we're getting these young people coming through and they have no skills, they have nothing at all. And so we're basically having to teach them, but paying them a full, you know, minimum wage, which is really hard. You really want young people turning up, hitting the ground running. And over the years we just haven't had that.
You need a special sort of a farmer, I would imagine, to volunteer to have a student or to be prepared to pay the allowance to have the student on their property.
Yes, so that's the important thing, is that they are students, and if we have any farmer trainers that approach us about that are interested in being involved in the program, it's very important that we tell them that they are students, that their priority is training, yeah, and that they're not an employee. If they need an employee, then they should get an employee, not use the our GFF students.
Jo Johnstone is Ellen's wife. She's also on the GFF board.
So we try and keep a track of that. They log all their hours that they do, is all logged online. So there can be red flags raised if there's suddenly a lot of hours that are getting done that shouldn't be getting done. We've got plenty of students, keen young people, but we are having trouble getting the farmer trainers because it is a big commitment. You know, basically on our farm we've noticed having a GFF student, our productivity goes down 50%.
50?
Yes, because you've got to take that time to stand by that person, explain to them everything that you're doing, and it takes a lot of time. Whereas a job you would have had finished, then it takes you twice as long to do.
What you find with farmers is they tend to be good at certain areas, but they're crap at others. So there's not many that are really good all-rounders, very few. So I think it's just amazing for these students to be able to work with the likes of Robin Stevens and Graham Breyer, who are top dog trialers. You know, if they were just plonked on a farm in the middle of nowhere, the reality is they wouldn't get exposure to these type of people unless they are really keen on their dog trialing.
And also they have a fencing contractors that spend time with them, showing them how to fence properly. They have shearers that spend time with them, showing them how to crutch and shear. All those things takes the pressure off us as farmers. So we're getting the best in their fields, training these young people.
The students also get a few tips on how to rustle up a meal from Ali Adams, their liaison manager. She says they have to post photos of their achievements in the kitchen.
We watch what meals they're uploading to make sure that they're good, nutritious meals and they're not heating up two-minute noodles or, you know, a bit of toast for dinner. It is a proper meal cooked by them. And I supply them with recipes or books if need be to help support them in their learning to cook.
Because yeah, you're dealing with 16 to 18-year-olds. They're young.
They are young, yep. So I am a second mum, a 24/7 on-call counsellor, a mediator between farm trainer and student. They come straight out of school, basically. They start the program in January. All of a sudden, they are responsible for cooking their own meals, showing up to their training on farm every day and off-farm trainings on Fridays. They have to do their own washing. They have to look after their house, all those skills that perhaps at home mum was already doing for them. And so it's quite a big ask coming out of school.
So it's quite a transition.
A very big transition, yeah.
Is that when your phone went quite a lot?
Yes, it did.
Is yeah. It going as much now?
It's easing off slowly, yeah.
Do you have to encourage the farmer trainers to give a bit of praise?
Yeah, so it's one thing that we've learnt is that the students coming out of school are used to getting a lot of praise when they get things right. It's sort of training the farm trainers that these students expect feedback quite a bit more than your normal staff member who's come to do a job and knows what they're doing and you expect it to be right, whereas these students are learning, so they are looking for that praise to say, yeah, I've done a good job and I've done it correctly.
How are they going? Is William in there with his dog?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and how's his dog?
He's going pretty good. The dog's got a pretty good eye on the sheep. So
very calm, mate.
Yeah, he's very calm. Very calm. Yeah.
William, how did that go?
Oh, pretty good, I think.
So you're not from a farm?
Not really. Dad was a vet and my uncle was a dairy farmer. Well, he's a dairy farmer and yeah, kind of grew up around it.
How's the cooking going?
Oh, not too bad, eh? He's still here, so I haven't undercooked anything, so that's the main thing.
William did really well.
Did he?
Yes. I mean, his little dog has got a very kind touch with the sheep. It's going to be absolutely brilliant in time.
They're going like a house on fire. Yeah. No, these guys are great. Well, they've all got their dogs showing interest in the sheep. The dogs are at different levels, just like humans. We all mature differently. But no, every one of them is keen and they're showing a lot of promise that they'll all be good working dogs. In another 12 months' time, they'll be out there doing their thing.
What about you, Regan? Where are you from?
I'm from Morrinsville.
Tell me about the farm that you're on.
Oh, it's a 50-50 bull and sheep and it's, it's real awesome. Got an awesome boss. He helps me out and teaches me everything.
What about the schoolwork portion of your job? What do you have to do?
Oh, we do a whole bunch of schoolwork on things that we do on the farm to help us improve. And our liaison manager helps us out by pushing us to get our work done and helps us when we're in trouble and yeah.
Who's this?
This is Ace, heading dog, yeah.
Yeah, what can Ace do?
Oh, not much at the moment, but he's quite a energetic dog as well. He likes to go hard and doesn't want to go home, really.
Have you bonded quite nicely with him?
Yeah. Spent most of my time with him to try to get a nice bond on him, so later on, when he's ready to work, he got a nice bond with him, yeah.
So were you at school last year?
Yep. I was in Year 12 at Tierra College. Didn't really want to go back for Year 13, as it wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to get back into farming. And this course popped up, and it was a bit of both, so yeah.
Must be cool doing something that you really want to do.
Yeah, it's awesome. This opportunity, yeah, it's the greatest opportunity I've heard of, yeah.
The students and supporters of the Growing Future Farmers program. The GFF board is working with industry to secure the program's future. It's currently funded by the Provincial Growth Fund and through the Tertiary Education Commission. Next year, it's hoped there'll be 64 first-year students in 8 regions. We'll put a link to the Growing Future Farmers website on our page and some photos.
Lovely to have your company this week. Next week, we'll be in Hawke's Bay, talking to a couple with the grand title of Sustainable Farming Ambassadors.
Well, that's it for us. Our webpage is photos and more stories. And remember, you can subscribe to our podcast there too.
We're also on Facebook and Twitter at RNZ Country. Email us with your feedback or stories at country@rnz.co.nz. From us, mā te wā.
Bye now.